Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Where are you at today?
I'm at home.
Why is that?
It snowed yesterday.
Ooh. Was it bad?
It snowed overnight. Well,
I'm getting ready to buckle down for what they're saying could be a big ice storm here.
Yeah, I mean, there are people probably out driving and stuff. I just don't feel like dealing with it. I went out and I shoveled the front. And then there are two ladies that were shoveling our front, too. And I was like, who are these people? But they kept going. And I was like, okay, well, I went back inside. And Julie said those are the people that the building pays to shovel. And I was like, well, why am I out there?
I was going to ask you that because I would figure you probably had people that took care of the outside.
Well, she said they were slow, and that's why I was out there, because I was like, I don't want people to die.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, in your case, it would only be like, you'd only be collectively responsible for somebody dying. Like, you wouldn't be solely responsible for it, since the whole building shares the responsibility, you know.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
So, I've just been working and stressing and, I don't know, kind of weird headspace lately.
Yeah, I was going to mention that as one of my talking points. I've been in kind of a fug lately.
Yeah, I feel like I've low-key been like that since the beginning of the year, but I don't know, I keep fighting it off. Like, I've actively been, like, usually you don't consciously say, get back, depression.
Get behind me, Satan.
Yeah, and I've been, like, actually doing that, like, corny shit, like, just every few minutes just thinking to myself, now, brush it off, you know, that kind of thing, but, yeah, it gets to you after a while, and, you know, being busy is a good thing, but also, you know, it's real busy, and, you know, taxes, things are still expensive, can't go outside, blah, 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 and you're just like, well, what do I do to make, all I want to do is lay on the couch, maybe play some guitar. But even that, I haven't really felt like. So, yeah, it's, you know, you say it out loud, and it just sounds like you're a whiny little bitch, which, you know, I kind of am. But,
well, it's
when until you say it out loud, it's all up inside. This is why people need therapy, right? Because you don't feel better until you say it to someone.
And it's, I mean, just hearing about it's different than experiencing it. That's why everybody's traumas or problems or whatever are relative, you know?
Yeah.
And there is no trauma competition. Like, you can't really compare apples to apples between different people's reaction to things.
I mean, but there are, you know, people with, like, what you would say, quote-unquote, real problems.
Well, yeah, and I mean, there are people.
I'm very thankful that at the moment I'm not one of those.
But you're conflating physical real-world problems with mental problems.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're not the same thing. You can have both at the same time, you know, or you can only have one. Like, there are plenty of people with physical problems that have no mental problems, you know.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
I mean, I'm just talking about stuff like not having enough money to pay the rent and stuff like that. I mean, that's a real problem, not knowing where your next meal is coming from or whatever, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're mentally dealing with it badly or anything, you know.
Mm.
Mine's been manifesting in, like, when I have a clear-cut thing I need to do that's not just something that's, like, a personal project or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay. I can sit down and work.
Mm-hmm.
I might be a little slower than normal, but, I mean, I'm getting through it. I'm getting it done, you know? But then, like, in between things, when I'm waiting on stuff to show up, like materials, art, or whatever, script...
Mm-hmm.
And I got, like, a little block of time where, okay, I could go do something else, like work on some music or clean my house or something, you know. I just kind of shut down. I don't shut down. I like kind of go blank a little bit. Like I don't know what to do, you know?
Yeah, I'm used to that too. I know what that is. Yeah, you get caught in this mode and you're obviously not a multitasker. Like I kind of am, but I mean, you have one thing and you do it till it's over. And then you get used to doing that so much that when it's not happening, you don't, it's just like being so busy that when you're not busy, you don't know what to do with yourself.
Yeah, I think that's it. Cause
it is like that. And I mean, it's part of that.
I've come off a long stretch of back to back to back, not really having any breathing space kind of work habits, you know?
It's something that I think everybody that freelances for a living has to deal with in some way. And some people are better at it than others because they don't look at it the way we are. And, you know, I envy them. I think they're probably doing better with it. I don't know who those people are, though. But
it's sort of a perfect storm, too, because I'm in kind of a music slump where it's just, I can sit down and noodle, but when I try to sit down and work on music, I kind of just get blocked, you know? And, if that wasn't going on, then I don't think my other thing would be going on, you know?
Yeah,
of course they're probably related somehow, but
they definitely are. Cause I've been, like, my whole thing is with learning guitar lately. I've been doing the song thing with Marty. And I'm kind of fascinated with the concept, you know, because it reminds me of how I got where I am art-wise. That, you know, you get better at songs by making songs, and you have to make a lot of them to make anything that's good. So my whole thing is I need to just be producing songs. I need to be making tons of them.
Sure.
Not thinking about how the actual process can be difficult. And I'm sitting there going, I should have like 17 songs today. And I'm like, no, it's not working. Like, and instead I get nothing.
And that gets frustrating.
Yeah. I'm very frustrated right now.
Right.
I have more fun, you know, practicing technical stuff on the guitar. That's more fun to me, but even that I haven't been doing lately.
I tried to break out of it just starting a couple of days ago. I thought maybe... See, I still have problems with certain chord changes, like finger figures, you know, like how you're positioned.
Yep.
And going from one to another. I mean, sometimes I'm fine with. Like, I don't even have to think about them. But then, like, other ones where I have to, like, say, dominate with the pinky. Like,
yeah.
On the lower strings and have, like, a kind of a reverse claw.
This is just regular guitar. This isn't.
Right, yeah. Just chord work, you know.
Yeah.
I've been trying to work on improving my transitions between chords. And I decided, while I've gotten a lot better at finger picking over the past couple of years, just from repetition and doing it a lot, I'm still pretty... How do I want to say? Like, everything I make up myself, I kind of still do in the same patterns or same ways. It's all done, like, you know, kind of the same, which finger picks something kind of thing. And I don't have a lot of feel for that. I think they call it Travis picking, where your thumb's moving between strings, keeping a separate rhythm from the other fingers that are using, you know, making a melody on the top strings.
Travis picking, hybrid picking, whatever.
But, like, I don't have a lot of feel for using my thumb independently from the rest of my fingers, like, as opposed to in a pattern, or in a continuous pattern.
It's a whole different thing to learn, though, man. That's not like a...
Well, it reminds me a lot of when I first sat down behind a drum kit and I was trying to independently use my foot,
you know,
my bass drum, snare, even just bass drum, snare, and hi-hat. But, like, doing it independently without making them all hit at the same time.
I can't do that.
and eventually I pushed through it and it clicked and I, you know, I got okay at it. So I'm hoping that's the way it'll be with this.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, at first, when I first started finger picking, I wasn't very good at it either.
I'm not very good at finger picking.
So I decided, I found a tutorial and I decided to sit down and learn the guitar to Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel.
Oh, cool.
Cause that's got that Travis picking, that thumb thing. And it's got the, it's got a bunch of, well, it's like three or four different chords, but they change and they're patterns I'm not comfortable with yet. Mm-hmm. So I figure, okay, well, if I learn this song, that might help me kind of break out of my slump.
Sure.
I mean, not that I want to record a version of it or anything. I'm doing this as more of an exercise than an end goal, I guess.
Never hurts to add to your repertoire.
And, you know, if I can pick it up, it'll give you, like, when you learn new techniques for your toolbox, when you go to write something, you know, you've got more things to draw from.
But they say, I don't think I've done it enough to have any experience with it.
Well,
yeah.
It's like when I pick up different, I keep different guitars in different tunings.
Yeah, you were saying that.
And it's a totally different thing. Like when you sit down with something that's like, say, I'll pick an easy one, like D80, G80. Like half of that, you know, the middle three strings are still in the familiar tuning. So you still got like a ground to work from that's familiar, but having those other strings in a different tuning like creates a whole different vibe. So you start writing different stuff because you're not going through the same things that you've learned in your standard tuning already.
Yeah.
Or like I don't play keyboards the same way I play guitar or bass. Like when I get on a keyboard, I start writing it different. If I'm figuring out like a bass line on a keyboard or something.
Yeah.
Because it's a different feel and it's a different layout and stuff. So, and like, or you know, playing mandolin, you know, that's a whole different thing from anything, you know, because it's, the tuning's backwards, you know, from what I'm used to. So it's, or like when I plunked around on a dulcimer, which is basically like a D80 most of the time tuning anyway, or like an octave with a whatever, next step up tuning.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I like to keep these things around, and I figure, you know, eventually I'll get out of this. I have hope.
It is forever for you now.
I have hope. But yeah, so it still remains to be seen if I can actually learn to play Salisbury Hill, because it's kind of complicated. I mean, it isn't. When you watch the guy play it, it's really only a couple of chords.
Yeah.
It's the fingers, all the fingers moving around that makes it look really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're starting from scratch, I don't think that would be a good song to learn finger picking on.
It's not an entry level song, which is, I mean.
Yeah. But, I mean, I figure.
You say you can't play guitar much to me a lot, and it's like, seems weird that you would pick that to go.
Well, I mean, I can play guitar. That's the thing. I'm not a lead guitar player.
Yeah.
And I'm probably, you know, I'm nowhere near like a top rhythm player, but I can play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I play it good enough to play the stuff I want to play anyway, for the most part.
So you say.
But, yeah. And like I said, I mean, I've been practicing my finger picking for, I don't know, several years now. So I've gotten to the point now where the finger picking is not the problem; it's the chord changes for me, and keeping track of that independent thumb rhythm.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, it's just it's weird. It's any time you try to make your limbs work separately from each other.
Yeah,
I was never like a sports person. I was never that kind of coordination. I was good at eye hand stuff with like video games and things like that. And like I said, referring back to when I first started playing drums, it took me a while to just get the hang of it. But eventually it clicks.
Yeah, that's nice when that happens. But you gotta keep doing it is the thing.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, like I said, I always keep a guitar around on the couch when I'm winding down at night. And I just plunk around. I noodle, so I play every day almost.
Yeah.
For a while. And at least keeps my fingers exercised and keeps my calluses from going away.
I have one on the couch, but I don't really play it because I don't want to bother Julie.
Yeah, it's different for me. I don't have anybody
she
to bother.
Says she doesn't care, but I don't know. Nobody wants somebody playing guitar while you're trying to watch TV.
Yeah, even if you've got like headphones on and an electric, you're still making some noise. Like,
I did a logo.
Oh yeah.
For done two at this point. For like, I posted on Instagram about how playing guitar has helped me the last couple of years.
Sure.
And one of the teachers from one of the web services contacted me, and he's like, well, that's nice that you mentioned me. Thank you. I'm glad I'm helping you out and stuff like that. Would you like to do a logo? And, you know, this happens all the time. You're, you know, your nephew or your cousin or your aunt or uncle asks you to do a logo. And I was like, that's not what I do. I draw comic books.
Right.
But luckily, I mean, I have a degree. I'm from, I mean, I went, I was advertising. I know how to do that stuff. So I was like, yeah, sure. And it was for, this guy is doing it with like Vernon Reed.
Oh, no shit.
I'm doing a logo for Vernon Reed. So I did it. And I was like, well, you know what? This logo, if you had an agency do it, it would cost this. How about you give me lessons for like 3 months? So now I'm taking lessons from this guy.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I had a lettering job like that I didn't trade for stuff.
Yeah. For it's kind of cool because he's a pretty expensive guitar teacher. And this is the other guy, not Vernon Reed, because that would be kind of awesome. But
yeah, that would be weird.
This guy is like very technical. It's weird because, you know, I do that thing with Marty, and it's like the opposite of the Marty lessons, because Marty doesn't really do any, like,
Widdly.
Well, he doesn't do lessons. It's more like a music therapy in a way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. You've talked about that before, how it's more like a life coachy kind of thing.
Yeah, because he's more about the songwriting part of it. This guy is... It's only technical stuff, so I'm actually, like, learning a lot. I've only had one lesson, so.
Well, that's cool. I
It's weird. I know more about playing guitar than I ever have, but I feel like I can actually play less than I ever could.
I feel
like it's a karma thing to me.
Well, you're just getting in your own head too much, I think.
A little bit. You know how it is. We were just talking about that.
Yeah, that's all ties back into the beginning of the conversation.
But yeah, it's been interesting. It's exciting and frustrating and makes my stomach crawl. Interesting things going on at Mictron 2000 Industries.
Well, I hope you continue well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's weird because he did like an intake, like it was like a like I was about therapy again. When I did the lesson, he's like, "So, what do you want to do? You know, with all this, you know?" And he's like, "Who are your favorites, like guitar players and stuff?" And I was like, "Holy shit! Nobody's ever asked me this before. I don't know, you know." I was like, I don't know what I want to do with this.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a weird question anyway.
It's like I don't want to go play somewhere. I don't want to start a band. I just want to be good at this.
Yeah, like, it's because, like, well, are you asking who do I like to listen to or who would I like to play like?
Yeah, and I was like, I can say Eddie Van Halen, but that's because I really like, I don't want to play Eddie Van Halen stuff.
Right. Exactly.
And so I was just saying people that I like, and I hope that's good. I feel like, I had the same situation with Jeff Parker, the writer on Ninjak. This was years ago before we were actually working with each other. We were talking about, you know, possible projects, and he's like, what do you like to draw? And I was like, You know, honestly,
pugs.
I like you to surprise me. And he's like, oh, that's the fucking cop out. And I was like, no, it's the God's honest truth. I like to be surprised. That way I'm not bored, you know?
Yeah.
I like weird stuff. I want weird stuff to draw. But that's such a general thing, you know?
You like a challenge.
I don't, it's not even that. Because if you give me an army of trolls fighting...
Oh, well, no, that's just tedious.
I don't want to be challenged that way.
I meant challenge in drawing things that you don't normally draw.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's the thing. I want to draw things that I, like, when I woke up that morning, didn't think I would be drawing.
Which, fortunately, that happens in comics more often than you think. Like,
I mean, less and less the more you do it.
There's still days I do something I'm like, I never thought I'd do that in real life. Like, letter something or whatever, you know.
Oh, sure. But, I mean, the first comic I ever did, I had to draw somebody sawing a demon in half with a chainsaw.
Well, yeah.
And I was like, well,
I didn't know
I'd be doing that.
It's because you were, what, working with Scribbly?
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, when you are working, when you do take music lessons, doing what we do for a living, it is easier to relate to them and not feel so intimidated.
Yeah.
Because you can, it's immediately you're kind of on the same, you do the same, you essentially do the same thing for a living.
Well,
you can, it transfers.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, plus.
Because you can relate to in very similar ways. Because I've had conversations with Marty, and I talked to, for one thing, you're both doing the thing you always wanted to do for a job. So you can relate to each other that way.
Well, and it helps a lot, too, I think, that you're not a kid.
Oh, this would be a whole different story. I wouldn't have done this when I was 18.
Right. And like, cause I'm trying to compare it in my head to like why I didn't take lessons when I was a kid. Because the people I knew that did take lessons, I just didn't, I was like, well, this is all really formulaic, you know?
Well, this is what I talked about when I was saying this is karma getting me, because I made fun of kids that did this when I was a kid, you know?
Well, at the thing,
that guy, he can't play and he's still taking lessons. And I'm like, oh no, I'm the guy that can't play and I'm taking lessons.
Not that there weren't bad teachers and good teachers when I was a kid, like just people who were easier to learn from, you know? But in my head, I didn't realize that, you know, structure and formula are good when you're learning something.
Yeah.
I just wanted to rebel against, I don't need more schoolwork kind of thing, you know?
They're assholes. Kids are assholes.
And some teachers are, too, but...
I was an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Most of the things you can...
Some people that listen to this show would say I'm still an asshole.
Most of the things you can attribute to teenagerdom, teenage angst, whatever, I went through and I exhibit it. I, you know, there are times when I'm ashamed to have been the person I was, kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. That's another reason why we're so glad social media didn't exist when we were kids.
Yeah, I wonder what that's... Well, I mean, it's been around long enough, I guess, that the generation that first actually was exposed to it at a young age...
There have been a couple of generations that have grown up with it.
They're in their adulthood now, and the internet's forever, you know?
Yeah.
So I wonder what that's doing to people's humility? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Well,
sense of shame, maybe?
I think you can tell just by watching the people that run everything that there is no shame anymore.
Well, yeah. I mean, at some point as an adult, you've got to accept the fact that the things you did as a kid aren't necessarily worth being upset about now.
Yes.
Like, and you can't constantly for the rest of your life be ashamed of yourself because of something you did when you were 16 or something.
Well, no, you can't all... You also can't be held to that. You can't be I was going to say you can't be held accountable, but you can be. You should be. You can't be beaten down by that forever, especially if you've learned from it.
Right. I mean, if you're talking about, like, especially, okay, it's one thing if you're in your 40s and you act exactly the same as you did when you were in your teens. Then you didn't learn anything, right? Because you're still an asshole. You're just an adult asshole now.
Yes.
A middle-aged asshole at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Or approaching. I don't know what lifespans are now. I thought I was in my middle age when I was in my 30s.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, if you're a reasonable person who's experienced growth in 3 decades since you were a teenager, then you're not the same person you were when you were 16, for one thing. Your behavior's different. You think about things differently.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I'm talking this, like, whatever. Other people are going to judge you how they're going to judge you, and that's sort of what being around people is. You know, people are a mirror to you, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But in your head, you can't sit there and agonize over every stupid thing you did in your teenage, or even in your early 20s, whatever, you know? I mean, yeah. After a certain point, if it influenced you enough to alter that behavior,
sure,
you can't keep agonizing over it anymore. You gotta let it go. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's something I didn't learn until, you know, relatively recently in my life.
Yeah.
And even now, I mean, I always jokingly blame it on Catholic guilt, but
yeah.
Even now when I think about certain things, I'm like, oh, I did that? You know, like, oh, that was dumb and insulting, and some of this is stuff I, you know, from my 20s. Or my 30s, it's like anybody, I'm not perfect, I'm a work in progress, you know?
You're pretty shitty work in progress.
Well, yeah, probably, but I try.
You suck a lot.
Now you're getting into uncalled for territory.
I'm
Red Brown in,
I don't know what I was trying to get to happen.
I don't know.
Mm.
Anyway, so yeah, well, I don't want to spend the entire show just reflecting on our foibles. That's it.
That was our show today.
Do you feel cathartic?
I do, you know, I do, like, this is why, you know, since we started this, I've never had a problem saying stuff on our show.
Even when you should.
Yeah, even when I And I don't know why, and I think it's because I want to say this stuff, and I never really have an outlet. I mean, I tell Julie things, but that, you know, how that whole thing about we just said people shouldn't judge you, that she does. No, I'm kidding.
What I said was people are going to judge you. Doesn't matter whether they should or shouldn't, they're going to.
She judges me and tells me I'm a bad person, and then I go cry, and I can hear her laughing in the other room.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It's the
especially,
worst.
Especially when your sobs and her laughter sync up.
Yeah.
It just becomes this, like, echo chamber.
It's like, here I was complaining about not making music, and here I am making the saddest music in the world.
Yeah. You know, and it's weird.
This.
It's weird that in times of such emotional stress is when you guys are so in sync.
Yeah, it's true, yeah. Usually we have nothing in common.
Oh, that's sad.
It's our 8-year anniversary tomorrow.
Oh, no kidding. Congratulations.
8 years married. It's almost like 20 years together.
I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Crazy, huh?
Because what? Yeah, it was like 05, 04?
Yeah, like 04.
Wow. That's weird.
isn't it?
Where'd that go?
I didn't think that would ever happen.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Not with her, just in general.
Yeah, well, you're not me.
My
parents just celebrated their 50.
Wow.
Not wedding, but 50 years from their first date.
Oh, that's sweet.
Last Saturday. And
Julie's parents have been together for like that long.
Yeah. You know,
pretty nuts.
I mean, my parents weren't always together, but, you know, their first date was 50 years ago anyway. I've mentioned my parents remarried each other a couple times, right?
Yeah. They're weirdos, like you.
Well, I learned it. I learned it from watching them, okay?
I mean, they're descendants of witches.
Well, I don't know on my mom's side, but...
Oh, I thought it was your mom's side.
No, it was my dad's mom.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And she was a good witch, like Linda.
Yeah, I mean... I feel like country backwoods witches are kind of... Was she a country backwoods witch?
Well, she lived in northern Kentucky. It wasn't quite country.
So I just assume they're the neutral at best.
See, now...
I think witches are kind of neutral.
Are you trying to, like, bring back Salem? What's going on here, man?
Oh, I'm not saying they're evil. I'm just saying they're on nature's side, and nature is neutral, man.
Oh, well, nature's vicious and tooth and claw.
Yeah. It's not evil, though. It doesn't care if you live or die.
Right. It just kills you when it feels like it.
It doesn't even... It has nothing to do with its feelings. It's just like, you know...
Well, it's amoral, I guess you'd say.
It's action and reaction. It's like, you messed with that deer just killed you. That kind of thing.
Yeah, man. Don't get too close to the deer. Those back feet are fucking murder.
So, yes, your dad's family are not good people.
It wasn't family. And, I mean, you're not entirely wrong, but...
They're amoral witches. Your dad's family are amoral.
Well, that's not true, because my dad's dad wasn't.
Okay.
He was a warlock.
Did your dad pick up any of this evil ways?
No, she did it well into adulthood.
Oh.
It wasn't a
so thing. she never passed on any of this stuff?
I don't think so, no.
Not even to him?
No.
Was he like, get away from me with your witchy ways, Mom?
I think by the time she started messing with that stuff, he'd already moved out of the house.
Wait a minute, she got into that later in life?
Well, he moved out of the house when he was like 15.
Oh.
Or 16, something like that.
You come from a long line of early starters. You were like out doing shit when you were like 14, weren't you?
Well, I mean, shit I shouldn't have been doing, yeah. I don't, you know.
Wow.
I don't know. Anyway.
Cool.
Enough about my uncomfortable family past.
You bunch of devil worshippers.
Now, see, you're drawing a line there. And that line,
does that bother you?
That line from point A to point B doesn't happen. Witches aren't necessarily Satan worshippers. They were nature worshippers and Mother Earth and stuff. Like, you know, Stevie Nicks.
That's not what the movies are telling.
That's because that's all.
I'm watching all the time. They say you guys are devil worshippers.
Wait, I'm a witch now?
Well,
you're saying you guys?
Yes, you know as well as I do that it's inherited.
What do you mean, you people?
Yeah, you people. You guys, you were born into this devil lifestyle, and you have to renounce it. I think it would be great for you to renounce it on our little podcast thing that we're doing here.
Technically, I think that since I was Catholic, and if I was born into it, it was absolved when I was baptized.
So have you heard anything? Have you heard of a thing called voodoo? That was Catholic.
No.
Yeah.
It wasn't strictly Catholic.
Well,
it was a whole bunch of shit.
I'm just saying, you need...
And what does voodoo have to do with the devil?
You need to get right with the God.
You're not even getting your religions right. You're getting all mixed up, man.
I don't know anything about anything.
Voodoo ain't got nothing to do with the devil. Jeez. I mean, you know, that doesn't make it, like, good, but it doesn't have nothing to do with the devil.
Like Stryper says, to hell with the devil.
Which seems like an oxymoron.
No, they're just saying go home.
Yeah, like, just go home. Go home now.
It's like that jerk kid in the neighborhood. Go home. Nobody wants to play with you.
Go home now. Go home.
Get out of here or I'll push you in a ditch.
Get behind me, Satan.
Get behind me. Go home.
Get thee behind
Nobody
me.
Nobody wants to play army men with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to push in a ditch.
Wow.
I say that because one time I pushed a kid in a ditch because he was messing with my brother.
I thought this had to have some sort of real-life correlation because you were saying it way too much. And
I can count on one hand the amount of times that my brother and I came to each other's defenses as children, and one of them was when a neighbor kid up the street was, like, basically hitting him, and I pushed him. He got his foot caught in his own bicycle, and then I pushed him again. He went down into the ditch.
Dang.
And I was like, yeah, fuck you. Now I'm going to beat up my own brother.
The only person that gets to beat up my brother is me.
Yeah, and then there was one time a kid was, he wasn't beating me up, but he was like punching me at the YMCA. We were outside of the YMCA. And my brother jumped out of a tree on top of him. He was climbing a tree, and my brother jumped out of the tree on top of him.
Very ninja-like.
It was very ninja. He was always more, you know, agile than I was. He was small and skinny. And I was tall and not skinny.
Don't you hate it when you can't remember a style you used in a previous issue of something and you can't find it in your reference?
Yeah, I've been trying to be better at, like, organizing that way.
I think I've forgotten something. I don't know what it is. I think I've already done it in this issue, but I've done it wrong, so I have to go back and find the page I did it on and fix it. That's no fun. Anyway. Hold on. I do need to find that page so I can remember to do it and don't just forget it again. What was I going to say? I watched something I was going to tell you about.
I don't care.
Read a cool book last week, or this week, about B-movie poster art.
Oh, I saw you post that.
And I guess, it, I mean, when I say read...
Similar book, but it's like... yours seems to be like old B-movie.
A lot of Mario.
Yeah, this was like more recent.
And this one, despite the cover being a horror piece, actually was split up into like, you know, like sexploitation, comedies, horror, action. Say what?
Mine was too. Mine has a different cover.
And it, when I say read it, I mean loosely, because it's mostly an art book. They've just got some descriptions of stuff, and they do some spotlights on particular director's work and artist's work and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really realize, it makes sense, but I didn't realize that McGinnis actually did several, like, softcore posters and stuff.
Who?
Robert McGinnis? No? You don't know
him? I guess not.
You'd probably recognize his stuff. He's got a pretty distinct style, and he covered a lot of different, like, book covers and movie poster stuff, and that he wasn't super cartoony or anything. Like, definitely wasn't like a, you know, Jack Davis or anything like that. But he was pretty realistic, but still like a stylized realism, I guess. He looked vaguely European in his art to me. But yeah, I mean, that was pretty cool. It, like I said, it had some commentary on the styles of posters and the themes, because they would go through themes of stuff like naughty nurses or whatever.
Naughty nurses.
Or girls with guns. Or nudie cuties. You know. Stuff like that. But I enjoyed it. It's a nice big oversized book, like coffee table book. And even the smaller posters that they print are still big enough to make out some detail on them and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it was neat. I moved on this week. I'm reading a book called it's an art book about VHS cassette covers.
Oh, cool!
And so far, I read through the action section, and of course, it's, you know, it's mostly '80s, like, yeah, mostly '80s stuff, which makes sense because, I mean, even though video was still big in the '90s, they started doing cover art different in the '90s, where they started using more photos and kind of generic design and stuff.
Yeah.
Instead of having a painter do it or a cartoonist or something. But it was pretty cool. I mean, there's stuff in there that... There's some stuff I remember seeing. There's some stuff that I just remember seeing the art on the shelf, and I never watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's stuff in there that I'm like, I've never heard of this, but it looks kind of weird. And that's just in the action section. So I'm looking forward to checking out the rest of it. This one's very light on. In fact, I haven't seen any commentary at all, except for there's a foreword by the book's writer, or editor, whatever he is, who is a poster artist, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also got a foreword by the guy that was the president or whatever of Mondo.
Oh, that's, yeah, they would know their stuff.
Yeah. And then after that, it's not, there's no commentary, but they do list, like, when the movie came out, who the distributor was, and if it has, like, alternate titles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can identify the artist on it, which a lot of times they can't. Although there was one I saw that, man, I swear it was Sienkiewicz.
He's some, yeah.
This was, it was in the 80s, it was like 87 or 88, I think. I can't remember the name of the movie. But just looking at the some of the detail, like, of it, little squiggly lines and stuff going on,
then yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, that looks like Sienkiewicz, for real. I thought about scanning it and putting it on Instagram and cause, see if he'll respond, because he's on Instagram, too.
Yeah.
The worst he can do is just not respond, right?
And as somebody that's been waiting for a Battletoad cover from him forever, he might not.
That's true. Hey, I don't blame him. He's probably a busy guy. Got stuff to do.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
I'm
sure he's one of the most famous artists ever.
You know. But the other cool thing is this is a lot like, you know, the old day when you would just go into a video store and pick up a VHS cassette and read the stuff on the back. And then stare at the cover for a minute to see if you really wanted to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's cool because what they did was they took all the VHS boxes and they unfolded them. And so it's like one per page. So you get a nice big view of the cover art and then you get to read the text on the back. And just check out these movies, you know, sort of. So the presentation is pretty cool so far. I like it. I'll give a summary when I get done, but I ain't there yet. And what else was I gonna say? Like I said, there was something I watched I was gonna tell you about. Just before we started talking, I was watching Strike Commando with Red Brown.
I love that movie. Have you got to the end?
No, I'm like,
oh my God,
right in the first half of it. Or first quarter of it.
There's two fight scenes in that movie that are amazing. There's this Russian, bald Russian guy that he fights twice, and it is amazing.
It's a Rambo ripoff, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, well, all of his movies are, well, a lot, he's done a lot of, he did one called Robo War, which is is a Predator ripoff.
Like a Predator / Terminator ripoff.
Well, it is definitely, I mean, there's scenes from Predator in it.
Yeah, and I remember it.
Yeah. And, and then Strike Commando is kind of a Rambo thing.
Is he in the sequel, Strike Commando 2?
Oh, I don't know. I remember when I watched it, I posted several video clips in there. Because there's like one where he's like, this little kid is dying. And it's just, it's so funny for a kid dying scene.
If you've got time for a subtitled movie? I watch, I don't know. I mean, I can only watch them at night when I'm done working and getting ready to try to drift off, you know. But last night I watched the 2017 version of Blade of the Immortal, directed by Takashi Miike. I probably butchered his name, but it was really good. I thought. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was very graphic, of course. A little long at 2 hours, 21 minutes. But it didn't feel long while I was watching it. It just physically took a long time to watch, you know?
Yeah.
But that was really good. I enjoyed it. I wasn't sure if I was actually going to like a live-action version of that or anything. And then I also watched... All right. Going into watching apocalypse movies, like, where, like... the apocalypse is a certain thing, not that they're trying to avoid it. You know, it's just, it's going to be a depressing movie no matter what happens, because everybody dies, right? You know, like there's a whole, not a whole lot of like feel good about that. So I tend to not watch things like that very often.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think the last thing I did was several years ago. I read a book about a guy that who's a cop, a detective, with the end of the world coming, but he still has to do his job.
Uh-huh.
Which was a bummer of a book, because he's like investigating a murder when, like, what, who cares if somebody gets murdered if everybody's going to die in 6 months, you know? But, like, he's still got to do his job, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the last thing I did in this vein. But last night I decided to watch one. It was, like, just sort of a little five-person character study kind of deal called Apocalypse of Go-Go. And, my God, there's a character in there that I just wanted to punch through the screen. Right off the bat, I don't know why they put him in there. Like, they didn't need him to be so antagonistic for the thing, because him being antagonistic didn't really help anything. Like, help the story-wise, I mean.
Yeah.
And he was just so fucking annoying that you wanted to strangle him, you know? Like, why are you here? Type of thing. Other than that, it wasn't terrible. Again, you know what you're getting into with these kinds of things. It's a depressing movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, for being a small cast and probably fairly low-budget movie,
mm-hmm.
It was pretty good. It was called Apocalypse of Go-Go. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, you got to go into it knowing it's not a horror movie. It's not a, you know, it's basically five people sitting around talking to each other, trying to have a party at the end of the world. Five strangers at that, so. Not a lot, there's no, like, scare jumps or big suspense drama thing, or there's a lot of drama, but no big suspense things going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's that. Yeah, there's that. Also, have you ever seen Cannibal Woman in the Avocado Jungle of Death?
Starring Bill Maher?
Yes.
Yes, I have seen it.
Yes, but not only Bill Maher.
Shannon Tweed?
Yes.
Yes.
And, what's her name? Swamp Thing?
Adrienne Barbeau?
Yes. And Karen Waldron, who's been in things that you've probably seen before. Don't you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I watched that the other day. I don't think I'd ever seen it before. At least I don't remember seeing it before. And that's definitely one of those, kind of B-movies?
Yeah.
Because it's a comedy. It's supposed to be taking jabs at feminism.
Yes.
But like, then the men act all like idiots, too.
Yeah. It's a lot like Bill Maher often is, thinking he's funnier than he actually is. That movie thinks it's a lot funnier than it actually is.
Yeah, mostly it's just a lot of, like, lame jokes.
Yes.
Not very convincing acting behind it. And, you know, like, it's sort of jungle exploitation, kind of, what, Amazon exploitation, whatever you want to call it. But not really.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have enough of anything, really, to make it, like, super good or memorable.
Yeah.
I don't think. But, anyway, I don't know. There's that. There was another movie I watched that I'm kind of interested to see what your take on it would be. Called Roadhead.
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay. It's recent. The Amazon's got it listed at 2020, which probably puts it at least around there. And it's it did not go the way I thought it was going to go when I first started watching it. Let me put it that way. It's kind of funny, but not in an obvious ha-ha-ha-ha funny.
Yeah.
It's meant to be kind of parts where it's just ridiculous and humorous. No gut-busting jokes or anything. And, yeah, just like I said, it didn't quite... There's a lot of weird elements in it. It's a low-budget movie, too. It's directed by somebody named David Del Rio.
I don't watch low budget movies.
Yeah, I know you don't. You got standards. I understand that.
Yeah, I got a lot of standards. I've got a lot of standards.
Yeah, yeah. I get that, you know. I mean, there's a whole standard thing you got going on there.
You need to, you know, respect me and my standards.
Oh, I get it. I get it. Oh, and finally, there was an Australian movie called Muscle Car.
Oh.
Which is a horror that seems to kind of steal part of the idea from... Remember that TV show that was on about the cars that ran on blood and they had the demolition races?
You told me about that.
I can't remember what it was called now, but... anyway, so this is a... Well, it's listed as 2017 on Amazon. I think it might be a few years older than that. And it's a shorter movie at an hour 16. But basically this lady gets this car, figures out that she can, if she kills people and feeds the car blood and uses a voodoo ritual, she can run the car on blood for some reason. And then if she gives it, 8 victims or 9 victims, she can actually bring it to life and give it its own spirit or whatever. Again, not sure really why you want to do that to your car, but okay. So it's sort of a tongue-in-cheeky kind of black comedy movie about that. And it's all like kind of like the lead character sort of like, you know, that 50s pin-up-y girl kind of look. And it's kind of weird, kind of funny, kind of Australian.
Kind of Australian. Yeah, watch out for that.
Yeah.
I watched all 3 Vice Academy movies.
How was that?
They are awful. I just thought I would tell you that they are awful.
I figured I started trying to watch one once and didn't get very far into it.
That's because they are awful.
Yeah. So what brought the Vice Academy binge on?
I don't know. It just came up on Tubi, and I was like, well, I haven't seen those.
Hey, what more reason do you need, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Well, at least you've watched them, so I don't have to.
I have to admit, I was very surprised by the continuity between 3 movies.
Oh, well, they at least bothered?
Yes. In fact, like, 3 starts where 2 leaves off.
Huh.
Yeah. That's really weird.
That's, seems like a lot of... So they actually retain the cast from the movie?
Mostly. In 3, Linnea Quigley does not return and somebody plays her.
Oh, wait, I did watch the whole thing because I watched it for her.
Well, she's in the first 2.
Yeah, okay.
She is not in 3.
I think I watched the first one then.
And they replace another character in 3, so a lot of people didn't return for 3.
But they kept the same character names?
Yeah, they're the same characters.
Oh, they Darren Stevens does.
Yeah, and Ginger Lynn is in all of them.
Yeah, I always kind of like Ginger Lynn.
I
just saw her in a more recent movie.
And, I can't remember. Oh, 2 is the one that has Robo Bimbo in it.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, Robo Bimbo. Yeah, how funny that's that belongs in actually Avocado Jungle of Death.
Robo Bimbo.
Robo Bimbo.
Robo Bimbo.
Robo Bimbo. Rochambeau.
Robo Bimbo.
Robo Bimbo.
Well, all right then.
Rural Juror.
Oh, Slasherette Party. That was the one I saw Ginger Lynn in.
Party.
Not an entirely good movie.
Not entirely good.
Not an entirely good movie. But, you know, it did have Ginger Lynn in it.
Oh.
If that means something to you.
It doesn't.
Well, then
that's not why I watched those movies. I watched them because they showed up. So.
Well, then that won't mean anything to you.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
I watched it. I didn't actually watch it for her. I didn't realize she was in it until I took a closer look at it. I watched it because I'm a sucker for, you know, punny titles. Like, if I think they're clever, I'll at least start to watch them so I can see if they're any good or not. I haven't seen as many of those lately, though.
Mm-hmm.
I came across a bunch of them, what was it, last year or the year before? Like, Lamageddon and stuff like that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but that's shown up in my...
What was the one with the unicorn carousel horse that was going around killing people?
Carousel.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or like, even in the romance movies, when they do like the, what was the one? It was, it was a play on like Romeo and Juliet or something like that, but it was a girl and a horse.
What? And
that's not as dirty as it sounds. But I can't remember what the title was, but it was like a play on something like that. So it's not like just strictly limited to horror movies or anything. But I do like them punny titles.
Sure.
Well, why not? Anyway, what else is new? I think we covered all that. Oh, man. I know there was something else I had. I need to start writing things down, because I get ideas in the weeks between we actually record.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forget to write them down.
You know, you say this a lot. I'm surprised you haven't started doing it.
I know. I say it a lot because I keep forgetting to do it. and then I realize that, oh, wait, there was something I was going to tell you about. And then I can't remember it. And I'm like, oh, well, that's dumb. So, I don't know. Whatever. I'm not going to remember it, probably. Yes. Speaking, you mentioned taxes earlier. It's after January 30th, so everybody's 1099 stuff and whatnot should be mailed out by now. You know.
Should be.
Right. Right. It should be, but it probably isn't if you're freelance. I personally... The only documents I wait for are my mortgage statement and my health insurance marketplace statement. So that, because my particular CPA wants those. And you know, I've tried to file my taxes without them before and he always asks me for them. So I wait for those. But I don't really worry about 1099s. Unless there's an issue, my accountant doesn't look at them. And I tend to keep fairly good records of when I get paid and who I get paid by.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, the only mistake I've made in the past few years is sometimes towards the end of the year, like you won't get a, and this mostly happened with paper checks. I wouldn't get a check until like whatever, you know, the 10th or something like that. So I wouldn't have it deposited until then. But the check was actually written in the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd be claiming it on the 1099s that they were sending me, and I wouldn't know that. So I would be starting it on the next year.
Mm-hmm.
But even at that's like a really minor functional difference. And then if it's really off, you can always file an amended return and just make up the difference if you've already paid the taxes. But, my point being is we should be seeing all our 1099s from people. Pretty soon. And if you don't really need them, then you can start filing your taxes. Actually, it was done the 24th of last month. You could start filing your taxes. But I didn't have the things I needed yet. Go, cool. Taxes!
Cool story.
Let's go, taxes! No? Okay. Other than that, I don't know. I got some cool lights. All the kids were really Instagramming with them last year.
What are you talking about?
Have you ever heard of a sunset light?
What is a sunset light?
Essentially, it's this group of LEDs with a big half-round lens on top of them, like glass lens.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they're set up is it, you know, it projects like a round image on your wall or whatever, but like you can set it. The original ones were meant to look like sunsets, like, you know, when the sun's low and it's coming through your window and a little bit of color shifting happens and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was meant to look like that. But then they started adding in different color options for some of the other ones. So you get, like, weird, strange things with, like, a solid color in the middle and some fringing or, like, some gradation in there and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, a real intense light. So, like, if you hold your hand out in front of it, it makes a real sharp shadow. And a lot of people on Instagram and whatnot, probably TikTok too, were using them in their videos and pictures last year. Like, if you see stuff with, like, a really sharp saturated color background and it's got some fringing on it and stuff, that's probably a sunset lamp that they're using as part of the lighting.
Okay.
And they're relatively inexpensive. I picked up, because I wanted to mess with some photography stuff, because I want to start working more on my photography this year, too. I want to, partly inspired by, like, because I used to do it. I used to develop black and white in my basement and stuff like that. I mean, we're talking back in the 90s. Once I moved out of that house with the roommates and stuff, and I started kind of couch surfing for a little bit, I couldn't keep that up, and then I just didn't get back into it when I moved to Chicago. But I still like taking pictures, and I do. So I wanted to start messing with, combined with the stuff I was reading last year about, like, the Bauhaus movement and their experimental photography, Man Ray and people like that. I kind of want to start working on it again, but, like, portraiture is just sort of art as opposed to actual portraiture. Just kind of experiment with it and see where I can go with it and what I can do. Heck, maybe I can come up with a good idea and you know, destroy the planet a little more by making it an NFT.
Oh, yeah, NFTs.
Yep. So I can make myself rich with a NFT thing. Go and blockchains.
Blockchains.
Yep. Yeah, I'm hoping to, I don't know, switch things up a little bit for myself this year.
That sounds good.
I think I was starting to get a little burned out with the schedule I was setting for myself, just strictly lettering. That's why I, like, last year when I was reading the Saul Bass stuff, and then I was working on some personal design pieces, like in the style of Saul Bass or whatever. Because I'm trying to break things up, because past few years, you know, I set myself a schedule by accepting a lot of work, but that also precluded me doing much of anything else. And it also, I think it hurt my lettering work a little bit, because while I got more mechanically proficient at taking shortcuts with stuff and kind of just having things on autopilot and speeding up my mechanical work, I wasn't doing a whole lot of, like, style experimentation or anything, which kind of put me in a static spot where I was doing fine work, but it was just the same thing over and over, you know, kind of stuff with, like, little variations. I mean, I would switch things up. Like, when we were working on a Grumble, there were a few things stylistically I did different there.
Yeah, well, I think Rafer has some ideas in his new book. I don't know if we've sent you a script for it yet.
Screw your ideas.
Uncle Alan is coloring it right now.
That's so cool.
You'll be getting pages soon.
But yeah, I'm going to try to, like, break out of my repetition, I guess. I don't want to be in a rut anymore. I mean, habits and, like, repetition are good for production and stuff, but if you are too slavish to it, at least for me, it leads to me getting burned out and not really wanting to do it anymore.
I haven't thought about it. It's not that I'm super happy with the work I've been doing lately, but I do feel kind of more confident than I have in the past. And that normally would worry me, because that would usually make me think that I'm probably doing something wrong. But I don't care.
Right. Well, I don't...
You know, because the guitar thing is taking my mind off of that.
Yeah, it's a distraction. That's a good thing.
But also, I'm just like, well, I should know what I'm doing at this point.
Well, trust that you at least do know what you're doing, you know. So
I should be okay with, you know, just getting a script and then drawing a script and then not fretting so much about the script, you know, that kind of thing. So.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I could be getting lots of reviews about my work not being as good as it used to be. But I wouldn't know because I haven't been reading them. So.
Well, if you do, then, you know, take that under advisement and take a look at yourself and reevaluate and move on.
I'm not going to do that.
It's all about evolution, constant evolution.
Yep, yeah.
And now we move into the ASMR portion of the show.
No!
Oh, yes.
I don't like that.
You gotta trust in yourself, Mike. You gotta feel that, you know, confident in what you're doing. You've been doing this for a long time now.
I can hear the microphone and you smacking your lips. I don't like it.
It's not smacking my lips, it's just rattling, like, back and forth. So, anyway, trust.
I'm drawing topless women in this comic book.
Wow. Why?
Well, you can't see them.
Oh, how are you drawing topless women?
I'm drawing the backs of topless women.
Oh. Not even a little side boob?
It's tasteful. Well, there is a little side boob.
Okay, there you go.
It's tasteful. I'm tasteful.
Yeah, I mean, you could draw the fronts if you carefully obscure them with, like, plants and things.
This, I mean, a lot of this, this ninjack art takes place on this giant billionaire hedonistic party yacht.
Yeah, party yacht.
So I'm making all the people nude.
So
not all nude, but
if it's a yacht party or a party yacht, rather.
Yeah.
Would you play yacht rock or party rock?
Party yacht rock, wouldn't you?
Is there
a yacht rock? Mostly party-ish anyway.
Like America and stuff like that?
America's not yacht rock.
Oh, yeah, it is.
America is like folk rock.
Seals and Croft. That's yacht rock. Dan Fogelberg.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's not exactly party music. I mean, you can play it at a party. But it's not like, you know, let's party music. I mean, it's not Andrew WK levels of party. But then what is, really?
I mean, I feel like Andrew WK kind of hijacked the term party and made it his own thing.
Well, I mean, it's just his own intensity anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like people weren't partying like that before he came along.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know.
I don't think partying used to mean, like, shoving your head through a window or something like that.
Oh, you haven't been to the parties I did.
No, obviously I haven't.
You never went to a rager?
The only party I ever went to like that was at Johnny Malone's house.
Of course, it would be a Johnny Malone.
In high school, and his band was playing.
Oh, yeah.
And a guy named Frank, in a karate gi, punched a steel chair and broke his hand. He drank a bottle of Jack Daniels and then punched a steel chair. And then the cops came, and we had to run across Johnny's significantly large backyard and jump over a chain-link fence. And I thought I was tall enough to climb over it, but I wasn't. And I got to the, like, I was straddling the top, and then Ronnie Barker, the biggest kid at our school, just came barreling through the fence, and I fell over onto the street.
Rager!
So, yeah, that was kind of like my super bad moment.
All right. So, like, you know, you weren't all lame.
I was pretty lame. I shouldn't have been there.
Hmm.
I mean, I wasn't supposed to be there. I was supposed to be at my friend's house. Which is where I walked to after the party.
The mistaken party. See, that's like one of the cool things. All right. Well,
but yeah, that was Frank was an early test case for the Andrew WK kind of party.
It's time to party.
The thing that was my favorite part is that he was wearing a fucking karate gi to a party.
Was this in the '90s or the '80s?
And it wasn't the whole gi. It was just like the top. He was wearing jeans under that. That was like a fashion choice.
Did he have a headband on?
He was not wearing a headband. Did he this was like the late 80s, dude.
Did he have anything tied around his arm or his upper thigh?
No.
Okay.
But the guys in the band, I think, did.
I had that phase for a minute.
And they played Cold Gin by Kiss.
Of course. That whole there was that whole inspired by Chachi thing with the bandana around the upper thigh. Yeah. We had a variation of it, at least I had a variation of it, where I tied the bandana like sort of like an epaulette around my left shoulder. Like, you know, so it went under the arm and on top.
I've seen that. On top I think some people actually put it under a loop on a jacket sometimes.
Yeah, it was sort of, that's what I did. I did it over a jean jacket.
Yeah.
Well, there's that thing, you know, where you have a leather jacket and you wear a jean vest over that. Usually the jean vest started life as a jean jacket and you just cut the sleeves off.
Yeah, I wasn't that hardcore.
So it's kind of, you know, raggedy.
I wasn't hardcore enough to have a jean jacket vest.
Well, see here, for me, I wasn't wealthy enough.
Hardcore.
I wasn't wealthy enough to, or probably hardcore enough to actually have a leather jacket. So I wore a jean vest over a jean jacket. They were different colors of jeans.
Oh my god, that's lame.
The jacket was a really dark blue jean jacket, and the vest was like, you know, really faded.
Holy shit, that was lame, dude. I would have made fun of you, even though I would have been scared of you.
It was still two-tone. So yeah, and then that was usually accompanied with a flannel of some sort.
Oh, of course.
And lots of patches on the jeans.
So it's like you, if Megadeth had a bench, you would have been on the bench for Megadeth until they call you up.
I guess.
Yeah, you were on the Megadeth bench because that's pretty much their uniform.
I mean, I was a thrash kid, so yeah.
You were on the Megadeth bench.
Yeah, you know, and like I said, of course, with lots of pins and patches on the vest and stuff. So, and sometimes just stuff painted on her, like hand painted. Because, before I started wearing that, I always wore a green army jacket around that I had painted a bunch of stuff on the back of.
Mm-hmm.
Like band names and pictures and things. Like, that was very hippie-ish at that point. And then I was a more thrashy kid. But, anyway. I don't know why I was talking about that.
Don't ask me.
Yeah, I don't know either. Seems kind of strange at this point. I don't know. I guess I should. Do we have any email?
I haven't.
I didn't actually ask last week. I just assumed we didn't. And that's fine.
I don't think we did.
You know, it's not like that affects our what do you call it? Not our egos, but our confidence or anything. You know?
I think it might affect yours.
No, not really. It'll be fine. I'll be fine.
Doesn't sound like it.
No, it's all right. It's all right, really.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it might be bothering you.
I mean, it's not like it takes that long to write us or anything. You could just write us and say hi if you wanted to. I mean,
sounds like it's bothering.
But I understand. You don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, you know, might force me into, I don't know, start writing things under pseudonyms to us so we have something to read. I don't know.
Well, I don't think I like that idea.
Well, you know, I mean, as long as it doesn't go to too dark a place, it'd be fine.
There are no new emails.
Okay. Well, there you go. I believe I saw you post something on Instagram that you have a book in store this week?
I have two books in stores today.
Two books. What do you have in stores? What do you have in stores for us?
Let me look it up so I got it right.
Okay.
It is, I have Joker Presents A Puzzle Box, number 7.
Is this like an anthology type of thing?
Yes. Well, it's not. It's one big story, but it's essentially, it takes the form of the Joker is up to something. He gets caught, and they're interrogating him. Well, they're interrogating all these Batman villains, and they're all telling these different stories. And the stories are done by different artists, and I did essentially part of the overarching one. It has to do with Gordon and Harvey Bullock.
Okay.
And I also drew part of, where is that? Justice League Incarnate.
Okay.
Number 4. And I drew some fourth world kind of apocalypse dark side stuff.
Cool.
Got to draw Flashpoint Batman.
Flashpoint.
Dick. And Obama Superman.
Obama Superman? Is that a thing?
Yeah. Huh. Superman from I forgot what Earth, where Superman is essentially Obama and he's the president. And I drew that, and those are both in stores today.
Well,
so I am not out of the picture, people. I'm still a working professional.
Right on. There you go.
And now we're drawing naked people in a pool.
So, yeah, it just shows how varied comics stuff is.
Yep. Got to draw Joker. I never drew the Joker. Well, I did the Joker in Young Justice, but this is the first, like, DC Universe proper Joker that I've drawn.
All right. I'm looking at the comic release list. This has really nothing to do with us, but we like them. So Albatross has Goon number 14.
That's right. I got a text from Eric yesterday. He's going to buy a standing desk on my recommendation.
Oh. Is it an adjustable standing desk? Like,
yeah, one of those, Uplift. It's the same company.
Right.
Uplift.
Why do you find that better than, say, just getting a fixed standing desk in a tall chair? Like a drafting height chair with a...
Because I like to sit, and the tall chairs don't work for me.
Okay.
And I'm taller than most people. I have to have a desk that would go real tall.
Okay.
So it was difficult to find something like that to begin with. So
it's like trying to settle on a mattress, man.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, an investment and stuff. A thing that you're going to have for a while. Boy, oh boy. So I'm still scrolling through the, whatchamacallit there? That thing, the list, the stuff. The list with the stuff and the... Image is having a good week. I got a lot of stuff in stores.
It's the Image 30th anniversary.
That's right, this year. I saw people posting about that. Congratulations.
So go do something I've done for Image over there. Go buy Battle Pug.
Yeah.
My revival.
Oh, I should also, speaking of anniversaries, I think Sam and Liz just had an anniversary for the toy store.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's right.
What's it been, like 7 years? 5 years? 7 years?
They've been
in their new location for like 2.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But yeah, so it's I want to say maybe their 7th anniversary being open. Something like that anyway, but congratulations, Sam and Liz.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty good for
independent toy store, yeah.
Self-owned independent place.
During these times.
Yeah, they managed to survive that, especially the fact that right when they moved is when all the shutdowns started happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impressive. You know, they're doing good work.
Doing good work out there.
And I guess, what was I going to say? Challenger's been open for a long time, too, speaking of stuff like that. I don't know how many years now. But. So, anyway. From Oni Press, Rick and Morty presents Heretics of Rick.
Heretics of Rick?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what this one was about. It's a Doom parody. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I remember what this one was about now. Sorry. I was just working on a different Rick and Morty thing. I was getting things mixed up in my head.
Stop bragging.
But, yeah, so anyway, it's kind of a Dune parody-ish. I hesitate to really call it a parody, because it's not, like, straight parodying the story of Dune or anything. But, anyway, Heretics of Rick. It's a 30-pager, because it's one of the standalone, like, one-shots, or not necessarily one-shots, because it's part of the Rick and Morty Presents line, but Rick and Morty Presents tends to focus on a single thing instead of, like, an overall arcing story. Mm. And, so they do them as, like, 30-page one-shots per subject in this. I'm not terribly great at explaining things.
You're all right.
Yeah, I think that's all I see, really.
It's all I see.
Except, here's a fun title from Yen Press. It's called, Breasts Are My Favorite Things in the World.
Hmm.
What makes it even more fun is this is volume 4.
Well, duh.
Volume 4 of, you know, Breasts Are My Favorite Thing in the World. I have no idea what this is about. I'm not making any judgment on it. I think it's a fun title.
I can take a guess.
Probably breasts. That's not actually what I thought.
What is it?
Well, I thought it was going to be, you know, like a dude-oriented story about liking breasts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a story about a small-breasted woman who likes big breasts, who meets a big-breasted woman who likes small breasts, and then something happens. I don't know why, it doesn't really tell you. Sparks fly, it says.
They're attacked by aliens?
Could be. Very well could be. I believe this is Japanese, so who knows? They could start playing soccer.
Ooh, soccer.
For all I know. But still. Anyway. I guess that's it for this week. We've enjoyed having you with us.
You know what? Through this show, I've been drawing this page, and I decided halfway through the show that I need to redraw two panels. So I was almost done at the beginning of the show, and now I'm only halfway done.
Well, one step forward, two steps back?
Yep, essentially.
And now you're going to blame it on the show?
I'm blaming it on squarely on you, not the show.
I see. So me helping you work through some of your, you know, internal issues was somehow damaging to your external artwork.
Mm-hmm.
What,
mm-hmm.
Did I make you spit up liquid all over it again? like I've never done before?
You have done that.
I did not make you.
You did? You were hilarious and therefore made me spit up.
I think that's the first time you've ever said I was hilarious.
Well, I wouldn't have laughed at nothing, would I?
I don't know. You laugh at a lot of stuff.
Laugh at a lot of stuff. But, you said something that tickled my funny bone.
And threw you into uncontrollable paroxysms of laughter that caused you to spit liquid all over your art page.
I did. Liquid, it was beer, I remember.
Okay. So,
and,
you don't accept any of the blame for possibly having the liquid around your art page? Or?
Drinking?
While standing over it?
In my mouth. I didn't knock over a beer onto my page.
I mean, you aimed your mouth at the page.
You
uh-huh.
did it.
Yeah. All right. Stick with that story. We'll see who gets a grandfather clock in his dreams tonight.
Oh, my God. Are you threatening me with old dreams of mine? You can't do that. You know, are you like Freddy Krueger?
You know, witches can you know, influence dreams.
You admit it.
No, I'm not. I'm just telling you a fact.
You
witches
admit
can influence
that you have dreams. Powers. You admit it. This is finally, I'm getting to the meat of the matter.
Nope, that's actually something I learned from the bears.
You, what?
Nothing.
How did you have time to talk to the bears while you were killing them?
I didn't kill all of them. It was mostly the alley bears.
I am confused by this.
It's a long, confusing story.
You are friends with bears?
I don't hate all bears.
This is news to me.
I mean, you know. Like I said, it was mostly the alley bears.
I didn't know there was a difference.
And the occasional polar bear.
What?
Well,
how did that happen?
I don't have much association with them. That's why I say occasional.
Oh, my goodness. How does that work?
It doesn't, obviously. I mean,
I am so confused by this.
One day I'll have to set it all down. I'll have to write about it.
Oh, wow. That would be awesome.
Tell everybody my tale. My bear tale.
Your berry tale?
My berry tale? My bear ass lies?
Yeah. That's more like it.
My bear ass lies.
Is that the name of the book?
That's my autobiography.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Oh, so many stories about the bears. Anyway. So, yeah, we've enjoyed having you this week. We hope you'll join us again next week.
Yeah, I don't really care.
You can reach us at crankcast.com, crankcast@gmail.com. Mike's website is ihatemike.com. You can go read some old Battlepug at battlepug.com.
Yeah, we'd appreciate that.
You can probably find newer Battlepug. It was like, you know, pirated CBRs somewhere.
You motherfucker.
But, you know, it's an independent thing, so you might want to actually, I don't know, plunk down some change for it. I mean, that's not directly going to benefit Mike because, you know, it's all in comic shops hands now, but I don't think Mike has a web store where you can buy it directly from him.
No, I'm not Ryan Brown.
Right. So, but still, you know, physical things are nice to have. Art looks pretty good when it's printed, like that kind of thing. You can find art at cadencecomicart.com. And I think that's it. Look for the Instagrams and the Twitters and the Kit Kats.
The Kit Kats and the Crackles.
And the Crackles and the
Swatches. Underground bars.
The Swatches.
Swatches, yeah, the Swatches. How many Swatches did you have as a kid?
I couldn't afford a Swatch.
Well, that's the thing, because, you know, people talk about them like they were cheap, but they weren't cheap. That was a big deal when we were kids.
No, they weren't cheap at all. I mean, I think I had a knockoff Swatch or two.
I had two Swatches in my lifetime.
Wow, fancy.
One was a present, one I bought with my own money.
Did you synchronize them?
I didn't wear them at the same time like some people did.
Oh,
some people had, like, several Swatches on, yeah.
Yeah, that was a thing where you'd wear, like, an arm of Swatches.
Yeah, I didn't do that. That was ridiculous.
It was kind of.
I had a fancy Swatch, and then I had an army green one that was just a plain old Swatch. And I tell you what, that was my favorite one. It was better than the fancy one.
They made plain Swatches?
Yeah, they were just plain plat. I mean, they were the base model.
Huh.
Plain.
Yeah, I mean, I had things. That, I think I had a watch or two that were Swatch like.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were just plastic watches with plastic bands, and
mm-hmm.
and they were in some sort of color, you know, that wasn't black or silver or whatever.
Yeah, you had a watch. That was just a watch. It was a regular watch, like a Timex that you could get at a Walmart.
Right, but they were obviously, watches like that weren't all that much of a thing before Swatches, you know what I'm saying? Like with the plastic colorful bands and
yeah.
plastic, like colorful faces on them and stuff. About the best you could approach before Swatch was, say, a Casio, which had a plastic band, but 9 times out of 10 it would either be like white or black or something. And the face was always just sort of silver or something. Even though it was a, you know, digital watch and it was printed plastic and they could have made it any color they wanted, they generally just made them kind of black and silver. And then Swatch hit the scene and watch colors went, you know, boom.
Nobody expected this at the end when we were trying to get off. When they said they were going to end the show.
Bonus content.
Get the Swatch history.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, there's not really a whole lot you can say about Swatches, I guess. But anyway, on that note, goodbye.
Goodbye. Did you turn it off already?
No.
I like the idea of Henrik in Denmark going, the fuck are they talking about? What are Swatches? He probably does know what Swatches are from
Switzerland, aren't they?
Yeah, so they probably had them out there.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they probably were in Europe before they were here.
Yeah, they're probably still over there.
Swatches. They had colorful ads, too. Anyway, are we done?
Yeah, sorry.
No, I didn't know if we were, I mean, are we actually done with the show?
Yeah.
Not just
I'm done with you.
You know, because I should probably end this and let the people move on their way sometime soon.
You should end this.
Okay. Well, now we're done.